What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Game Dev Unchained, the number one game development podcast about game development and the lifestyle thereof. I am your host, Brandon Pham, and with me, a special guest, Daniel Biestedt. How you doing, Daniel?
Well done.
All right.
I'm doing good.
How are you doing, man? Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks. It's fun to be invited. I've been listening to your podcast bits. So it's fun to be invited. Sorry, but I missed your first email, by the way. It kind of slipped by.
No worries. It gets buried and ignored, yeah. But that's why I do the follow-ups, just to make sure. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for coming on. This is actually the part of the podcast where I ask our guest, which is yourself, to introduce yourself to our listeners out there of who you are, where you've been, and where you're heading.
Yeah, so my name is Daniel Biestedt, and I am a character and creature artist from Stockholm in Sweden. And I've been working in VFX and doing game cinematics and working in 3D for over like 10 years now. And I recently switched over to game development, joined Embark here in Stockholm, which is a new company from a bunch of started from a bunch of DICE people. That's it, I think.
That's more than that's it. I mean, if anything, you yourself have been making quite an impact, I think, because of the whole Blender community have been growing in the last couple of years. Mm. And it's one of those like sleeper hits where, you know, Blender used to be like like something that we tease about in the industry, and then now it's like it's such a force of like of doing everything basically really well. On top of that, you know, where you're at right now, Embark, you guys are kind of known to kind of do very interesting things, most notably how you guys are really dedicating a lot of time in R&D and sharing that information pretty openly. So those two things are kind of like the topics of today that I want to kind of dive into, because they kind of go hand in hand. Mm. Just to kind of relate, being an environment guy, there was a period of my time where there was like a dark period where I'm like opening like 10 programs at the same time to do one thing, right? Yeah. And, you know, questioning myself of what am I doing here? Because the danger of that is, of course, even though it's very specialized programs to do a very like UV mapping or something, a lot of these programs kind of die out like dinosaurs, and your dependency on them becomes an issue. Especially when you're moving from studio to studio, you're asking for these programs. Like, what is this? Do you need a USB thumbstick to turn it on? Why do you need this? So it's a loaded question, but do you find yourself in your industry? Is that part of the reason why you kind of really dug into Blender? Because it seems like it has everything done pretty well.
Yeah, it's funny actually, because like the reason I started with Blender, I'm coming from a Maya background in the beginning. Yeah. Like started out with 3ds Max first, and then quickly realized, oh, there's much more Maya tutorials out there. It was like back in 2006 or 7 when I started looking into 3D. And so I worked with Maya and ZBrush for quite some time. And then I saw some video on YouTube about cycles, which is like the path tracer in Blender. And at the time at the studio I was working for, we were using a renderer called 3D Lights, which is a RenderMan clone. And I never got my head around it. I was doing characters and wanted to do look dev and stuff like that. And I picked up cycles and Blender and was like, oh, this is just easy. I can just, change stuff. And it felt really intuitive to me. And then I sort of like had a look around, like, what else is there in Blender? Because I was big on modeling, so I was interested in the modeling tools. And I was actually blown away. Like, first, there was this uphill struggle just to, like...
Learn the UI.
Yeah, exactly. And how it works and how everything relates. But once I passed that little hill, I was just amazed about how much faster I could work in Blender compared to Maya. And so I really adopted it and just started working with it at work and basically used Maya as the most expensive publishing tool ever for models. And I was also rigging at the time in Maya, so I had to do that as well. But otherwise, just doing everything in Blender. And been doing that ever since.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge... I'm sure you were being teased in the office all the time. And
oh, yeah.
And like the technical artists, I think one of the biggest resistance is because the TAs tend to create tools for the other programs, right? And there's like a sense of... just making things easier, right, for colleagues to work together to kind of share tools. But you know, it's so open now where, you know, if there is like a special tool, you can always import it in and export it. But I think in the last 2 years or 3 years, you tell me, it feels like there's a shift now where everyone's at least more accepting. I still see like the AAA space a little slow to change, right? You know, where we're still talking about it and, you know, smaller circles are like, Blender, are you serious? It's a joke, right? But definitely a shift, a lot of recognition, like such as yourself using it, and people are slowly adopting it because the everything thing is a big deal, right? Because I've used programs that just disappeared after a while or just never updated, right? And it's just like this old tool. And you kind of feel left behind when, you know, it got to a point where it's like, why am I not just doing this in Maya? Just forcing, it takes longer, right? But like the easiness of moving studios and not having to buy and request like 10 softwares, right? I was noticing an issue every time I do that. and it became inefficient, right? When you were trying to be efficient, right? Why am I switching between 10 programs to do anything right now? And what has been like the biggest future that you saw with Blender in the last year or so that has been just huge, monumental leaps from other 3D programs?
I would say one of the biggest things is the viewport, actually. When Clément, the developer who has developed Eevee, when he started working on it, and I was really blown away. Because I'd seen his work. He was doing a separate branch, not working for the Blender Development Fund, but rather doing his own thing with the Blender branch. And then he got hired by the Blender Foundation to implement it into Blender. And then you got these little updates every week. And I kind of got in touch with him and started chatting with him on Twitter and stuff. And it was just so much fun. It was like Christmas every week that you get something new all the time to play with. And, I think people who come from like, oh, I'm a young person growing up, I'm playing games. Oh, it must be so much fun to like model stuff and light stuff. And then they come open up Maya, open up the viewport. It's a gray cube. You know, it's super uninspiring.
Yeah.
But what I found is like in Blender, what I love to do is go from, if I create a character, I want to go from A to, you know, Z as fast as possible. I some people are like, okay, first I do the sculpt. The sculpt will be perfect. Then I do the texture, you know, that kind of thing. But I just, I want to just go through it all as quickly as possible and then go back and iterate.
Yeah.
And then if I have created the lighting and the environment that the character is going to be in pretty early on, it's so much more inspiring to work because you're in a, you know, you're in a pretty environment and you can see all the shadows and stuff like that. And especially like, I did, I wrote an article, for Embark a while back about how I create hair for games. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest selling point of using Blender is actually that you can see a really good representation of the game hair inside of Blender because it has, you know, great opacity and great shading and stuff like that. So I think that's a huge benefit compared to working in like Maya or any other application.
I would love to kind of hear your thoughts on something I'll bring up a little bit later, but like to kind of tie that into, it seems like there's a certain philosophy at Embark. You know, you guys are still, I don't think haven't announced anything, but it sounds like it most likely something awesome, but this R&D period, right, is something that I feel have always been really deprioritized, especially in AAA. It seems like there's a huge... It used to be a big part of game development, but lately it's been like, let's just get the ball, you know, get to the vertical slice, figure out what the game is. Like it was design focused, right? And not so much in tech. And what I love what you guys are doing is like, wow, you guys are actually bringing it back to the basics and let's build the foundation up and find shortcuts, kind of like what you're talking about with Blender, to make the games as efficiently as possible, which seems to be like this generation's goal. When it comes to AAA, it's like smaller team, more efficient, more leaning on tools rather than manpower to get to the next level. Is that something that is the right assessment? What are you observing? What's the biggest challenge and wins for this generation of game development?
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. I mean, putting time into building tools, especially for finding, you know, that kind of monkey work that you do as an artist, you know, exporting something, bring it over to another application, that kind of thing, or baking or that kind of thing is, you can save so much time by fixing that workflow. So it's fast and easy. And it's also like, you free up the artist from doing boring work. So it's win-win as well. I mean, time is the most expensive part of game development and the effects compared to, you know, applications and stuff like that. So I think it's, it's important to try to, just make sure that things can be more efficient. And that's really something that Embark has taken to heart. Mm-hmm. As you said, there's a lot of R&D going on and everyone is encouraged to, you know, use their time to try to, like I've been allowed more to spend time on coding and stuff like that so that I can build tools for myself and possibly other artists so that we can, you know, just doing small kind of tools to make things go faster.
That alone is like kind of mind boggling to hear 5 years ago, right? An artist learning to code. Like it used to be such a no man's zone between artists and programmers, like we do not cross, but it's becoming a theme where at least being a core member of a internal team, right? The need of an artist being more technical seems to be where the job market's going, right? Like content making isn't enough anymore. You either have to be either a technical artist at some level or basically the at the very front, the design creative idea guy, right? And it seems like the middle is like the jobs are disappearing, and more driven by AI or outsourcing or something like that, just to get it out of the studio and not waste time. Is that something that you're seeing too, like as in terms of the trend moving away from?
I'm not sure actually that the jobs are going away. Mm-hmm. I kind of think it's the opposite, that all the human resources are being sucked up sort of into a lot of companies, so that there's like a shortage of people to create games. Because it's like 10 years ago, perhaps, you know, the amount of time you need to spend on creating a game would be yay much.
Yeah.
But now with AAA and stuff like that, it just increases. Of course, yeah. you have indie titles and stuff like that, which is great, I think, more diverse games. But these, you know, mega big games, it just takes so much people to create those.
Right.
So I haven't heard of many. There's always a lot of layoffs, I hear, like in the States and stuff like that. That's always sad to hear. Especially, I think it's a special circumstances now with Corona and everything. But it feels in general like there's a lot of jobs out there for game developers. But I also think that you need to be like adapting to an ever-changing workplace environment kind of thing. You know, there's always new workflows, ways of doing things. Like you mentioned, being more technical, like using new applications, like using Houdini for stuff or Blender, instead of just using the same application and trying to, you know, doing. I think it's important to try to think about how you can create content in another way than you always have done. Mm-hmm. And not only looking at other people and trying to copy their workflow, but trying to think out of the box. And yeah.
Well, in terms of your toolkit, you kind of mentioning that, like what is your top two, top three must have programs to make your job easier? The must haves, Houdini, Blender. All right. Those two definitely have been like blossoming softwares where you have to learn this. I think as an artist in the last few years, is the third one, optional at this point, like Substance or what do you think?
Yeah, I think Substance Painter is it's really good. It's one of those great applications where you have a good representation of the final product as well. Have shadows and good lighting. And I also like the proceduralism and reusability of things in that application, that you can store a smart material or smart mask and things like that. And it's a really quick baker as well. So that's cool. But I guess I would like to see more automation in that software, where I know there's the Substance Automation Toolkit, but I think I think it could be improved. My main software nowadays has been Blender, and Pablo de Barro has been working on the sculpting part of Blender, has been doing a really good job. So nowadays I actually do a lot of my sculpting inside of Blender.
Oh wow.
And there's always been historically a lot of artists who always sculpt details in their assets.
Yeah.
And for me, I think it's a time-consuming way of working. I think it's much better to use triplanar mapping or procedural texturing, that kind of thing, to just add details to your assets instead of hand sculpting those. That's just like a workflow thing, you know. Triplanar shading has been around for ages, but you don't see a lot of artists in tutorials that has been using it when they're creating assets. You see a lot of like when you have artists who want to create huge render, they use a lot of triplanar mapping, but yeah, not really assets makers, I think.
Yeah.
So that's just a.
Are you talking about triplanar mapping and texturing, or in the sculpt itself? The texturing, right? Just final details.
Yeah, exactly. Texturing, but I mean, sculpting, like in VFX, sculpting is basically everything is stored as a Udine sequence texture, so it's all textures in the end anyway.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter if you have sculpted them or you apply them in a texturing software. So,
yeah, I think in general, there with game artists especially, there's a lot of wasted time in each stage. And I think the amount of versatility of programs kind of we kind of get lost in that. It's like, well, I'm in ZBrush now, so I'm going to spend all my time in ZBrush doing ZBrush things, right?
Yeah.
And then it kind of compartmentalized, you know, the end product, which is, you know, a model with textures on it, right? And there's like an overemphasis of each stage being perfect. Especially when you're working as an external development team outside the studio, there's like little gates put into place of like, we want the best quality each stage. It's like, well, no one really works like that, because in the end, it's like, what's the end product and what's the deadline and how I get there shouldn't matter. But yeah, I think because of game development and getting so more, much more complex with teams being bigger, but budgets being bigger, that leads naturally think gates are like the best way to be efficient, instead of just, you know, a little trust in the senior artist of like, let me just, I'll get there. Just tell me when the deadline is. It's like, well, when do I, how can I check you on each stage to make sure that you're going? Yeah, it does feel like the last few years, it's kind of morphed into that weird thing. And I think I caught myself and it's like, well, I mean, I guess they can use this for marketing at some point, like just a pretty high res image. But rarely that's the case, right? It's a lot of wasted work and time in those little areas, especially. Yeah, I can't imagine for creature and character. So you've been seeing a huge shift then for that department, especially. Like these programs are kind of disabling those bad habits of over sculpting and doing these things, right?
Yeah, I think especially repetitive work. There's a handful of sculpting softwares out there, right?
Yeah.
And most of them are, really good when it comes to sculpting. You can, you know, go high poly and do great sculpting work there. But the interesting thing in Blender is that you can use all the other parts as well. So you can use, you know, cloth simulation and things like that, adding hair, which is procedural and not like, oh, every vertex is a thing that you have to move with your brush. And also you have instances. So I've been experimenting with, you know, just, so for instance, if you are creating a lizard, Godzilla, for instance, what you would do in a traditional sculpting software is you would sculpt all of these, you know, little plates on his back, right? That's a lot of plates.
Yeah.
But in Blender, you could basically create just three plates or so. And then you just do a so-so job with each of them. And then you just instance those across the back. Mm-hmm. And then you go back and like hand sculpt it better. And all of those instances will be updated. And then you can replace them or, you know, add more geometry to them or change them to something else entirely.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. Like there's, you know, I'm an environment guy. So with environment, you never really need to sculpt really anything, right? Unless you really want to. But like when you're in a ZBrush programmer, you know, it doesn't have the advantages of the instances and all these procedural things that are more computer generated than artists instructions, right? So there's always seems to be like a handicap if I fully dedicate my time on that side and then coming back. I mean the bridging and all that stuff, I've always tried to help with that with GoZ stuff, but like those little times that you switch back and forth, it just builds up. As there more, it gets tiring switching program to program, and it kind of kills the flow. Is kind of like what you're kind of talking about. That flow is so important. I mean, it's
especially if you're picking up an asset that you worked on a week ago.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Exactly. And then it's like, oh, I have to open this file, and then this file, and then this file, and did I have the ZBrush version updated with the Maya version? I think so. And then you have to, it's
a lot of file management for sure. That I have a bad habit of like making it quick and saving onto my desktop, right? But like my desktop just gets filled with like all these stupid files eventually, and it just becomes a mess, and I hate that. And it's just a bad way of doing things. I do like the fact that it seems like the movement now is not about having all the programs for every specialized thing. It's more about what's the one program that can do it all. Because and for good reason, because a lot of these programs don't survive, like the very specialized program. Right, it's like this is not gonna make it. It's not enough. It's like completely dedicated to UV, like Rizm. Right, I was like, oh, Rizm seems to be fun, make it easier. But like, it's just for UV. This is not gonna survive. UV is not that hot for people to kind of invest, you know, learning a program for and stuff. And it's always that danger, right? The danger of like, well, should I really bet on this and learn this program and hope that it's around 5-10 years from now, right? Like I've kind of abandoned so many softwares in the past that kind of have PTSD from learning new things, right?
Yeah. So, but it's also exciting to learn new things, right?
It is, but I'm like at a point where I rather have reliable software than keep learning these specialized software that don't survive, because I have so many. Like a graveyard of softwares that just aren't around anymore. Just not enough support, right? Because business is real, right? So
someone's buying them all.
I know, right? I kind of want to ask you about this because, you know, being a creature and character artist, you know, you're finding efficiencies in your workflow. You know, MetaHuman just came out, right? And that's something that seems to be like the mega scans for character. I dived into a bit, but I would love to kind of hear your perspective, being that's your discipline and your thoughts on it.
I mean, it's one of those things. It's very similar to when 3D scanning started happening with characters, you know, with heads. Right. So you had there was a bunch of, you know, tutorial maker people who was into sculpting a couple of years back, was like, everything you need to know is anatomy. You need to focus on anatomy. And now, you know, now it's like, well, you don't sculpt people. You just bring in the scan kind of thing.
Right, right.
And at least in a lot of the for a lot of the character assets, but then you have you have some hero character assets that you will, you know, sculpt and have a, you know, create a proper character, and you know, you have a art director that has a certain vision for the character. But yeah, there's a lot of, you know, opportunities for people who just want to sculpt faces that has gone out the window for sure.
Oh yeah.
And that's why I think it's important not to just put all your eggs in one basket. I think it's good to have a really good to have a specialty and try to, but also try to, you know, look at what is tangenting to my specialty. What else can I learn? Because there, it's all also a huge danger in trying to learn everything. I'm kind of stupid enough to try to do that, but it's very challenging, you know, try to, a lot of my personal projects I do, you know, I do everything like, yeah, lighting and rigging and, you know, characters and it's very time consuming and challenging and I fake a lot of the stuff, you know, as well, just to get things done. But, yeah, to answer your question, I think MetaHuman will eat up a lot of the opportunities. But there's also all of the other stuff, like outfits and things like that for characters, which we can still create.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, like, that seems to be, not being a character artist, it seems to be the shift, because base models are usually provided. You guys don't really do things from scratch anymore.
No.
Not right. And you did bring an interesting point. It seems like you guys got hit twice with the, so this is your second readjustment. Because, you know, animation had like the mocap scare, right? It's like, do we have, and of course that was adjustment where you're just gonna have to fix up mocap. Yeah. And then,
I remember you mentioned that before. But it's like the jobs don't go away anyway, because
there's more animators more than ever now. Exactly. Yeah. Adjustments. You know, mega scans, we just got hit, right? People scanning everywhere. In the last five years, photogrammetry just kind of blew up. Like a lot of what you guys did, you know, over EA and stuff, and DICE, you know, kind of opening up that door. And there's definitely an adjustment. It's like, I don't know any environment guys sculpting rocks anymore. I mean, that used to be a thing. The bombardment of rock tutorials is like, this is how you really make sure that the rocks look good. It's like, I'll just take a picture. Nobody wants to do that anymore. But I think it's good, because this is what I was talking before. It's like artists are more needing to lean towards either the idea man or the technical guy, because these tools are becoming so available now, where there's better use of your time to kind of learn how to talk to these tools rather than, you know, learning anatomy now. I mean, it didn't seem like, it sounds like great background knowledge. You know, obviously there's a strong foundation of an artist to know anatomy, but it's like to absolutely have it as a character artist, it doesn't seem to be too much of a case anymore, where we're trying to ship something, you know. Have that changed greatly, or is it more like my blank observation of what you guys do?
Sorry, I missed the question.
So like a huge shift from, I think when I was beginning, like 10, 12 years ago, anatomy was like an absolute necessity if you want to be a character artist. Mm-hmm. Don't you have to perfect it, right? To even think about being a character artist, right? But now it feels like so many tools are available, and the way the company structure is when it comes to creating characters, there's a lot of reuse, more like Frankensteining and kit bashing, sort of, right? And then outfits becomes like more of the the highlight of a character more so than the what's beneath, because you really, unless it's Conan or someone that's bare chesting it, anatomy gets rarely seen on a surface level.
Yeah. As an artist, I still think
foundation is king. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, learning anatomy and stuff like that is important if you want to create, you know, your personal art and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I think in production, there is a lot of reuse, and you use a lot of scan data for humans. Definitely. So it's not all bad. It opens up the door for more junior people to come in and do character art, like start off with, you know, I'm doing a bag for this character or things like that. You can sort of split up a character and help out, being multiple artists on one character if there's a shortage of time. Mm. But of course, everyone, all artists wants to, you know, own their character and do as much as possible of it by themselves, I think. I think anatomy skills are not
super useless.
It's not useless, but it's not as important anymore because there's so much more usage of scans.
Yeah.
But now there's more shift towards
stylized
hair, and definitely doing stylized characters. That's even more interesting now because then you get to create something that didn't exist from the start, right?
Right. Yeah, it's one of the things how, you know, with photogrammetry, you shouldn't really invest your time as an environment guy being the nature artist, right? Foliage master, like stop learning to be awesome at that. But like more towards creative ventures, like kind of what you're doing, like with creature art, right? And that's completely, unless you're finding a Batman, there's no way to photo scan that. It's a pretty safe job. And if anything, anatomy is very key in creatures, unless you're dressing them all the time in outfits. But mostly it's always anatomy, you know, nude creatures, right? So I think that the understanding of shifting and recognizing, all right, I mean, that frees up our time to do other actual creative stuff rather than just, you know, sculpting your body into the game all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And I also think that for environment artists, there's a lot of potential for, you know, layout and storytelling and like, oh, now I'm gonna create this room and make sure it fits the style and, you know, dress it properly and doing lighting and things like that. There's always creative work to be done, I think, and there's always work to be done. It never seems to be a shortage of that in my eyes.
Yeah, I think there's always going to be human input punching at the keys to make sure that, yeah, that's why I think it's one of two people. You either got to be the technical art who can talk to the computer and make sure that it's the language is being sought out. And then the other one, which is, you know, having the idea, a vision basically, which is great because I think it needs to get to that point for us to make efficient games on budget. It kind of scared me last gen with the PS4 and the Xboxes that we were just ballooning up budgets and we were throwing more people at the problem, and it always results in, like you said, in the States, layoffs, right? It's just this bad cycle. And I do see like studios like yours, Embark, and what you're doing as kind of the way of developers taking control again, apart from the business, right? Just like, we can do this faster. We can do this with less people. And you know what? We can still all be here next year.
Yeah.
Like it seems more like a developer movement more so than a business movement, businessman movement, right? Which actually saves the business part. But it seems like developers are getting so senior and smart about this now that they recognize that we need to be efficient now because it sucks otherwise.
Yeah. And it also, you know, it enables everyone to have more of a nice life work balance instead of
yes.
working, you know, 60 hour weeks, which, you know, a lot of us has done in the past.
Get tired of it. Yeah, definitely. One of the things that I'm curious about is obviously, right? We're coming out of a disastrous, crazy year. A whole new element has been introduced, right? Where I don't know how it is over there, but United States, it's always been a crazy thing to say, hey, I'll work from home even on a Friday, right? It's just unacceptable. There's too much intellectual property at risk, but now all the systems are up. I would love to kind of hear your take in what your perspective on what last year meant for us and will mean for us going forward for game developers.
Yeah, I think I think it was a great thing that came out of this horrible year. You know, just enabling people to work from home, especially in VFX, there's been so much, that you can't work from home. You have to be at the office, that kind of thing. You work with clients that has, important,
important
data that can get lost, basically. But yeah, working from home feels like it opens up the door for game developers to work not only in their own city, but rather like freelance and working at different studios from time to time. Mm-hmm. So I think it creates more job opportunities as well. And it also enables you to take a risk on people. If you're not sure about a candidate, you might take the chance because it's not being not going to have to spend a lot of time and money relocating that person.
It's true. Yeah.
And also the environment thing as well. I think it's a huge plus as well. And for me, you know, I think you have kids as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have two kids and it's quite stressful, you know, picking up and leaving them during the day. So it saves me a lot of time not having to ride the subway from and to work all the time.
Yeah.
But I guess the downside is that you lose these kind of little in-between moments with your coworkers. That you don't really, you know, going to lunch and talking about the project you're doing and those kind of random ideas that spring up and sort of like overhearing people talking about a problem and you'd be like, oh, I'm hearing what you're talking about. I can help you with that.
Yeah.
But then again, I think people has adjusted quite a bit. So I think it's so easy now to ping someone at work, like, hey, could you help me with this problem?
Right.
They can just like see your computer instantly, your screen, draw on top of it. So everyone becomes a bit more available, I guess.
Yeah.
And me, I've always loved helping people when I can. So that's something yeah, I just really love doing and being able to do now since Embark has, you know, adopted Blender, and a lot of the 3D artists are not, you know, used to working in Blender. So I get my opportunity as well to help them out, which is
great. Show them the way. Yeah, definitely. I see huge advantages. The updates alone, like you said, are so frequent. It's so hard to catch up. And there's just so much love into that thing where even I am like starting to get into it to make sure that I'm not left behind, because I am tired of, you know, juggling too many programs. But, the one thing too is, you brought up a lot of good point. Like more people are going to be willing to take risks because, you know, you're not having to spend too much resources to kind of get to the work. It's like almost instantly, basically. Mm-hmm. And then, although there is a give and take trade, right, with remote, you know, like the in betweens, like you said, with coworkers, and it's fine. It's like one of those things. It's like, it was cool, but you know, there's a lot of like stuff and shenanigans that happens in the office that, you know, you kind of, it's okay to let go, right? So like, when you need me, here I am. When you don't need me, don't bother me, type of thing. So it's an adjustment for sure for a lot of people. I hope a lot of states, at least in the States, there's like a huge amount of employers asking people to come back in September, like complete reversal, right? So, yeah, there's a lot of this AAA. Well, I mean, they're paying for these offices, and there is like this feeling of safety now with the vaccine. And it's like, well, I mean, let's get them back in here. And so I think there is another wave of like problem fixing. Because there's a lot of people that permanently moved away from work thinking that they can do this forever, right? But now it's more like special case basis. So I'm starting to see that. And I think what you do, what you guys do at Embark, what I do, and a bunch of concept artists, right, are used to kind of being self-sufficient, but there is a huge amount that aren't. They're just not used to it. And it was such a big change in the home life and the balancing. They need that space and physical presence to function. And that feels like more than 70% of developers. Hence why I think last year, I don't know, you saw the GDC survey. There was huge, like huge amount of percentage of games delayed, right? Just delayed. Still figuring that out apart from IT infrastructure, right? It was just how to work together, how to talk to each other, how to not do too many Zooms, basically trust, right? The trust hasn't been established. And I think we would have needed another year for people to be at peace at that and be efficient. But I think because the vaccine rollout is coming out, September is the cutoff date. So, but I will say this, that it still allows, like if you're a rock star such as yourself, that door is open because the infrastructure is there for you to kind of pipe in and work from home still. But I think the majority of employees are going back, unfortunately, which is what I'm hearing and seeing a lot.
That's a shame. Well, I think the best situation would be almost like kind of a 50-50% solution.
Yeah, that'd be that's what people are hoping. They're praying for that. It used to be 4 days at home, 1 day at work, you know, just for team meetings. Now it's like, can we just have half? It's going to be, if anything, maybe 1 day every 2 weeks or something is what I'm foreseeing with people. And then you know what that means, right? Only a matter of time where it's like, come back for a full month. It's the trickery. But I would love to kind of hear your thoughts about what are the challenges that you're seeing. It could be just character focus, but you know, it seems like you touch a lot of the disciplines, overall pipeline of what this generation is versus last generation, the key difference in making games. Is there any?
Is there any challenges? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I wish some of my more experienced and wonderful colleagues were here to answer this question, because I mean, I'm pretty new to game development still. Mm-hmm. And I lean on them for a lot of the time. I've been really happy working with the great colleagues. But I guess if I should answer, the challenges is basically what we've been talking about, trying to being more efficient. And working smart, and also try to utilize sort of like, if I think it's better to if artists find their solution themselves sometimes,
yeah,
talk in the group instead of having a person on top saying like, oh, we should try to find a solution for this, and then that person thinks he or she has a solution. But it's always better to have like a constant flow of discussions between colleagues, and having artists having access to technical artists as well for tool creation and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I mean, one thing I think could be a solution further down the road is sort of like, AI and I'm just spacing away here, I think. Mm-hmm. Let's just scratch that.
No worries. I get what you're saying. Like the overhead of manager and artist being able to talk to each other is definitely helps with efficiency issues, right? The less that you have to use like a middleman to kind of transfer information and just keep the flow going. It's a lot like what we're talking about, like not changing programs midway when you're doing something and trying to figure something out and having to switch to another program to create another stage, right? The game being more complex, more complicated, the time wasted in just delivering information, just asking a question can be a bottleneck, basically. You're just removing all those bottlenecks. I would also like to add, like, the challenges of this generation is definitely just, it's bigger. Gamers expect more, and all the time faster, right? And it's just it's kind of like every generation has that. It's like faster, better, bigger, And I feel
the
like
ambitions grow.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That's why I think there will never be like people won't be out of job, because the ambitions is just, the bar is being raised all the time.
Right.
Both in games and VFX. So, yeah.
I will say that artists, especially out of all the other discipline, gets in their own way more. Like, we've all had great art directors and we've all had bad art directors, right? And it's all about, it's so subjective, where I do feel artists have a bad habit of noodling too much, right? And that seems to be hopefully going away, where I'm from the indie crowd, right? We see games that are so ugly that it's beautiful, right? It's so simple, that is complex, right? That type of thing where it's not about 1,000 hours in ZBrush making it as detailed as possible. It's about, you know, how fast did you get it? And is it noticeable as not being super detailed? Like that balance is something that I'm finding in everything I do where, you know, there's personal projects, you know, of course you just want to max it out and just push it very far. But in production, I'm seeing there's more importance in if you can get it faster, good enough, because it's a part of a whole picture. That's the better path. The better path. I hope we're shifting towards that because I feel like a lot of games, only a few games can get away with like, this is a masterpiece. You know, this is Mozart. It's perfect. All right. But most games kind of, I think, mistakenly use that as a guiding light. And that's the way to do things. And it's like, you have half the resources, half the budget. What are you doing? You have half the time. Like, you shouldn't be making games that way. You know, you shouldn't be trying to make Last of Us with two people, right? Don't do that. There's so many better ways to do it and have a good product at the end.
Yeah, I think that's that seems something really true there. It's as an artist, it's so easy to get lost in the details. Like if you're doing a mushroom in a forest, you're like, this is going to be the best mushroom ever. And you're always looking at it in the wrong context. You're looking at it like big on your screen when when you evaluate the asset that you are creating, you should look at it in the context, you know, the forest basically. So your character like walking in the forest and it's yay big in the screen.
Yeah, exactly.
As an artist, it's more fun to create more content for the game than that single mushroom, you know, that you spent.
Exactly. Yeah. I hope it's something that listeners and developers are learning because, you know, we've been in those studios. It's like, man, I spent like 8 months on that. And that, especially the environment guy, you just walked by it. I mean, that's my first lesson in game development. It's like, I'm not going to spend that much effort again on that time. In the context, like you said, it's so many moving. It's a concert, right? It's so many things going at the same time where at the end of the tunnel, the gamer experience is king, right? What does this attribute to the game gamer? It kind of ties back to what we were talking about at the beginning. It's like, you know, if you can finish things in Blender from beginning to finish, it's a much better product than you having to switch to ZBrush just to make sure that its scope is 100,000%, right, to your liking. But it's a lot of wasted time. So I see that as a team is what we've been doing a lot. It's just like people, everything's so separated. Everyone needs to be perfect at every stage. And then at the end, you only see like 60, 50% of that, right?
Yeah.
It's a very game development thing. I don't know what it's like in visual effects. It seems like visual effects, you guys have to get everything perfect because everything's like super, super huge pixels and super small pixels and it's super detailed. Is it? I can see why you need to be detailed because it's so up close all the time. But even then, it's only things on the screen, right? You guys are efficient in that way.
Mm. Yeah, well, it's easy to fall into the same trap because if you are a bunch of artists, or rather, if you are an artist that just gets, you will create this apple, for instance, then you're going to create a great apple. But in the shot, it's going to be in the back, right?
Yeah.
So it's much better actually to say like, hey, artist, you're going to create this room with that little apple in the back. Then the artist will sort of always look at the shot in the correct context, right? Here's the camera, here's all the stuff. And that little apple in the background, I'm just going to, you know, spend 3 hours on it instead of those, you know, days that you would spend if you would just do that apple.
Right.
So I think that's a good trick. speaking of Blender, like say for instance that you like create a bunch of nature assets, right? Let's pretend we're not using scans. Like what you would, the nice thing there, you can have, you can set up an environment with lighting and everything, just as in your game. And then as you are creating the asset, you could, I mean, you could texture it inside of Blender as well. And then you just, in the same file, you switch to the other scene and you see, like if you had created a log, for instance, you can just place it in the this little forest clearing, for instance. And then you would see it in context. So that's...
it's very useful. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's huge. Yeah, I think that's the advantage of seeing things all in one program, because it is a reminder of like... don't spend so much time on this thing. it's basically the role that I usually took as a senior environment guy or lead talking to a junior environment, because you know, as a lead, you see the whole picture of in the context, and you constantly have to remind the junior artist who's kind of focused on this piece of log being the best job ever. It's like, no, spend a day. It's in the back. It's filler. And it's something that dynamic is starting to be individualized now. It's like, you got to start telling yourself that. And it's, I don't think it's quite there yet, because it's weirdly, like, I think it's unhealthily where we're kind of aiming at, like the pinnacle of game development, right? The pinnacle of games that we all love, right? And it's like, well, I spent like 5 months on that thing. Therefore, if we want to equate to that, we got to spend 5 months on that thing. It's like, it's very dangerous type of thinking now. More so, I see it in last generation and this generation more than the PS3 and PS2. Because PS3 and PS2 was very limiting on graphics, right? There's only so much you can do, right? But like now we're reaching to this point where, you know, it can look really good if you spend more time on it. Yeah. And that's kind of disabling us in a way, I feel, where artists just feel like they're obligated to spend all that much time to make it look really good in case, you know, it falls in front of your screen or something. Something odd like that. Yeah. LOD0 all the time. It's like, to do LOD0 to make it look like the best. Not everything needs the LOD0 that looks, you know, cinematic quality. It's like, oh, well, it's there for that, right? It's like, no, it's not there for that. Just chill. Don't worry about it. But I want to thank you, Daniel, for coming on, man. We're at the top of the hour. It's everything about the conversation is everything I've been wondering myself. So thank you for answering him. This is the part where I actually shut up and hand the mic over to you to kind of promote, give a shout out, give attention to anything that you want to talk about. Go for it.
Yeah, sure. I guess you can find me on ArtStation, Daniel Beisted, and on Twitter, my Twitter handle is 3dbeisted, and support the Blender Development Fund at fund.blender.org. And if you are interested in Embark, want to work there, or just want to see what we're doing, you can check out embark-studios.com.
Awesome. All right. Well, again, thank you for coming on, talking with us, educating us. I'm sure you're convincing more and more people to use Blender, or at least try it out after listening to this episode. So be safe, man. Hope you are near to partying with all your friends and family again. but thank you for coming on again.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you are liking the podcast, go to the Apple iTunes store and give GameDev Unchained a 5-star rating. This will help spread the joy and love and exposure for the podcast, and we thank you very much. If you want to continue the conversation, go to our Discord, which can be found on our website, www.gamedevunchained.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at BlueChamps, BlueChamps. You want to catch these episodes live every Tuesdays and Thursdays, go to twitch.tv/blue_champs. Email me any of your concerns or questions that you want me to read aloud at the beginning of each episode at info@gamedevunchained.com. And if you want to further support us and help unlock the next feature, which is the voicemail feature, go to patreon.com/BlueChamps. This gives listeners a chance to kind of call in, leave a message for both me and the guests to answer your deepest, darkest questions and comment on your deepest, darkest secrets. Thank you, everybody.